And we have another date for your diary, and that's tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, August 12th. There's a new movie starting at IMAX, and it's called Hubble 3D. Yes, Hubble, referring to the Hubble Space Telescope. Now, this movie features the things that they did to upgrade and repair the Hubble Space Telescope for the final time. It runs through a bit of the history of it, and then in amazing detail it shows us some of the incredible stuff that it has found, and they've been able to animate it. So in this feature today, which is going to take up most of the rest of our show, we're going to hear a little sneak preview of the film. We're going to hear how they film IMAX films in space from aboard the International Space Station and aboard the space shuttle. And we're going to have a chat with James Nyehouse. He's the director of photography for Hubble 3D, for Space Station 3D, and for Mission to Mir. And we'll also speak to David Booty, who's going to take us on a tour of the projection room at IMAX Melbourne. So lots to look forward to on tonight's space show. So why don't we take a little bit of a sneak preview of the film, the Hubble 3D film, and this is part of the opening sequence.
Seven brave astronauts are about to launch on the most challenging and risky mission ever flown in space.
It's an interesting emotion when you're sitting there and realizing the clock is ticking, all the preparation time is over, it's time to go out there and do it.
It's not a foolhardy risk. It's not, we'll escape down Massachusetts Avenue in rush hour. If there's a risk that goes along with achieving a dream, I think it's worth it. And that's what I would want to tell my kids.
Dreams do come true.
It felt a lot like Christmas morning, you know, going to get to open your presents. And I got up with a big smile on my face and marched down to have my breakfast and just really felt great. Right now, the thing I'm looking forward to most is the solid rocket booster ignition. I want to get started.
I think it was my grandfather that had the most profound influence on me. He bring out the binoculars and he could teach us about the sky. No idea that I would be traveling to the stars. But here I am.
I go through the mission in my mind and ask, okay, what could go wrong? And I ask myself, are we ready to handle it?
This is the last chance to see the Hubble Space Telescope. Planet Earth, warmed by the light of our nearest star, the sun. When you see our home like this, you think, out there in all that black space, could there be another place like it? Is there anybody else out there? The nearest of those stars is billions of miles away. Hasn't stopped us from exploring them. Galileo was the first. Centuries later, we built a truly magical machine, the likes of which Galileo could never have imagined. The Hubble Space Telescope. It took more than 10 years and 10,000 people to build. And it would be the first of its kind to be launched into orbit around the Earth.
Stop.
This astronaut crew was chosen to ferry the telescope to space. They launched from the Kennedy Space Center aboard the shuttle Discovery. On its door, the great silver bird was released to soar in orbit 320 miles above us. Soon, it will be sending images back to us. Could we finally unlock the secrets of the universe? Discover other worlds like ours? The whole world waited for Hubble to open its enormous eye.
And we're going to hear more about this wonderful movie. That was the opening sequence of that movie, Hubble 3D, which is about to open here in Melbourne. But first, let's listen to this message.
Hi, I'm Brendan Wilkinson. They call me the Outlaw. I've got a little bit of legal information for you. And by the way, it's free. If the police give you a court date which doesn't suit you, you can have the case adjourned, particularly if it's for the first time. Sometimes you need an adjournment to get a lawyer or get your boss to come to court. But don't take this for granted. Someone must get in touch with the court and get the court's okay. And don't forget, if you're on bail, you've got to be there to have your bail extended. Okay, see you later.
And you're listening to The Space Show. Our feature tonight is on the new movie called Hubble 3D. Now, it's about to open here in Melbourne tomorrow, but there's another movie been showing here in Melbourne for about over 5 years now, and it's called Space Station 3D that you may have seen. This is not to be confused with the new movie called Hubble. And this old movie is narrated by Tom Cruise. And here's a reminder of what you probably heard when you were watching that film.
What an incredible sight. A Hollywood special effect, you're thinking? But no, it's for real. It's the International Space Station. 250 miles above us right now, it's being built by just a few dozen astronauts. If you'll come along with me, we'll go behind the scenes and find out how these extraordinary people do it.
Okay, Chris, I'm just going to head on back to the after the payload bay here.
Roger, I see you.
Oh, what a beautiful view out the port side there.
And spectacular.
Working outside in the vacuum of space is a dangerous business. First, you calculate all the risks. Then, you learn how to deal with them.
Hey, Chris, it looks like I've drifted off structure here a little bit.
Try to pull myself back in.
Scott, it looks like your tether is disconnected. I show it coiling away from you.
And, Scott, you headed out over the port nose of the vehicle. Looks like to me, it looks here on the port side. They should maybe be able to see out windows 1, 2, or 3.
Okay, I'm going for the safe room.
Okay, I agree.
Deploying the hand controller.
I see it.
Okay, it's swung out. Bring it up to work envelope.
I got it in front of you, I see
power
it.
Power on. Got AH light.
Okay, it looks like you're starting to correct now.
Beginning to close.
Stop. Looks nice.
an extract there from the movie Space Station 3D, which tells the story of the construction of the International Space Station. Now, filming IMAX in space has been going on for a long, long time. The first IMAX movie shot in space was the A Dream is Alive film, which was made in the 1980s when the space shuttle was new. Now, Tony Myers is the director and producer of a number of these space films, and particularly Space Station 3D and the new one, Hubble 3D. James Nyhaus, who we're going to speak to in a few minutes' time, has been the director of photography on the film, and we're also going to hear in this little clip Marsha Evans, who's an astronaut, and Susan Helms, another astronaut. Both of those two astronauts have helped film these Hubble movies. So here we go now with how they film IMAX movies in space.
It typically takes 6 to 7 months to train a crew in our operations, in IMAX operations. But that sounds like a lot of time, but it's really only about 30 hours, sometimes less, spread over that time period.
The many hours that I spent in training prepared me to set up the lighting properly, to adjust that lighting, to set up the camera, to load it, and then to unload it, and then to do the actual shooting of the scenes.
They have to light. We have special lights that we built to fly on Space Station. They have to do the sound recording. They have to run the camera. They have to, as I said, pull focus. They have to frame. They have to be the actors. Basically, both shuttle and station crew work together to put, you know, to make the movie.
The IMAX camera itself is fairly complex, and to make it work properly and to have the proper lighting required a lot of training on the ground.
One of the biggest training things that we use is we let them shoot film. We'll take the camera and we'll put it in a mock-up, and we'll run real film through the camera, and then we'll take them and we'll set them down in a theater and make them watch what they just shot. You know, it's like watching your worst home movies on the biggest screen in the world. It has a big impact on you, and they learn really quickly that way.
And basically, Jim was the one that was assigned to manage the IMAX cameras to discuss the specific choreography of how to set up a scene, discuss the lighting, discuss operation of the camera if he had a question about it. But the bottom line is, you only have so much film on orbit. All that film is allocated to one take, and every take is allocated to a different scene. So every IMAX shot is about a 30-second take, and that's the only take you get.
What we get from Tony is a storyboard. She knows kind of what kind of movie she wants to make, and we get scenes in a little storyboard.
The last session we have, which is when they're in quarantine right before flight, you know, the last reminder I say is, remember, you're the directors, not me. So if something comes along, if an alien comes up and sticks his face in the window, don't not shoot it because it's not on the list. It's up to you. If you see something better than what we've got, go for it.
At the end of one of the rolls, it was probably 10 feet or 12 feet of film. It was like 4 or 5 seconds of film. Wasn't much. And they decided just to burn it off. And so they had a little blow-up space alien doll. One of the challenges of training the astronauts really is the aesthetics of filmmaking, and in particular of 3D. How close they can put objects to the camera, the kind of lighting they can use with it.
We carried the film up in a can, and we had to put it into the magazine to then work on the camera. And we had to do it with our arms stuck in a black bag with everything inside, and you had to do it all by feel. And oh, by the way, everything's floating around inside there.
We shot around 70,000 feet, 13 miles of film, and
I didn't realize it was that much.
On the very first shot made for IMAX Space Station 3D, we went to Kazakhstan to film the launch of the first piece of Russian hardware aboard a Proton rocket in Kazakhstan. And we went out there, and we've got this big housing that we put the IMAX 3D camera in. This is not the space 3D camera. This is our regular two-strip, weighs 300 pounds, giant camera in this housing. So we've got a housing and a camera that weigh about 500-600 pounds. He got the camera started. The camera's running. The rocket starts. You know, boom, boom, crash, bang. Rocket goes up. Stuff is flying everywhere. It's the facelift that you don't want to have. This big chunk of concrete goes boink and hits the right eye of the camera, shatters the glass in the camera, continues through, breaks the filter that I've got in front of the $45,000 lens. It turns out to be a great shot. We use it head to tail, and, you know, with the sound effects and rocks whizzing past you in the theater, it works really well.
When you're planning exterior shots, we have a cargo bay camera that takes most of the beautiful wide views of the station and the construction of the station, and also earth views, and you do a great deal of advanced planning to get the conditions just right.
But I still think it's miraculous that they can sit there and plan when the sun's going to be at the right angle for the field of view, and they've got charts and graphs, and they say, now shoot at this hour, minute, seconds, you know, to the tenths, and you do, and it works. To me, it's all magic.
And then what, of course, happens is the timeline of the flight, for one reason or another, things get delayed. And the exact opposite, all of your planning is in the garbage pail because your shot is going to happen in orbital darkness.
Susan Helms, the first woman to fly space station mission. She just looked great on camera. She had a great personality.
And we're supposed to do a scene where we need to have stuff go everywhere. It was a matter of practicing spreading these clamps all over the place and making it look like it was an accident. That was part of the acting. And Jim finally says, okay, this is the take. I think you guys are going to be able to do this. And sure enough, it's in the film because it worked.
I thought that it was a mistake. She acted it well enough to fool me.
There's a scene in the movie where Jim filmed me sleeping, at least pretending to be sleeping. The bottom line is you're supposed to look like you're really sleeping. And I've had lots of people come up and say, you know, were you really asleep? No, that was acting, because that camera is so loud, there is no way possible you can sneak up behind someone and film them in IMAX and not have them know, because the sound of the camera is very, very obvious.
I'm there all the time that the camera people are awake. I've had, you know, crews call down, you know, you hear over the intercom, Houston, this one's for IMAX. We're going to shoot it at F11. What do they think about that? And I'll go, F8. But, you know, that's happened three or four times. You know, I've called F-stops from, you know, 24,000 miles away. The astronauts are very, very creative problem solvers. We like moving the camera. Moving the camera in space, you have to have somebody hold the camera and you push the people holding the camera.
Tom is holding the camera and I'm the dolly.
Marsha the dolly.
My experience as a Foley artist, you know, mostly we get to be directors and grips and filmers and lighters, but because I've been friendly with Tony for years, she invited me to come up to Toronto to look at the, you know, the first cut of this with the sound, and I said, well, the hatch doesn't actually make that sound, you know, and it doesn't really make the sound. So she sent a sound guy down to Houston, and we wandered around the center trapping wild sound. We'd instrument a hatch and then close the hatch so he'd get the sound of a hatch closing. Tony, to this day, is not happy that I didn't let my hair out to film one of those scenes, because when it's out, it's huge. It catches things, you know, it collects bits of food and bits of other things, sort of like a big bush. And because there are such narrow spaces that you're going through, you know, it gets snagged on things, and so it's easier to stay contained. Plus, when you go to the window with your hair out, nobody else can see out of the window.
Some of the most challenging shots of the space station film are the exterior shots of, you know, the hardware coming together. First problem there is that camera only has 8 minutes worth of film. You've got to determine ahead of time exactly what you're going to shoot or what you want to shoot, you know, because that's the big moment when the two pieces come together. Susan is the robotics arm operator, and they operate this Canadian arm from a workstation inside the space station with, you know, little grips and a couple little bitty TV monitors. And they're picking up, you know, 17,000 pounds worth of hardware. And then for her to come back and see the IMAX point of view of it from out in the space shuttle's cargo bay, you know, it was like, was it really that close?
One thing I had asked for was, could we have a view inside the Russian craft called the Soyuz? So nobody promised, and Sergei and Shep, who were the first permanent crew on the space station, sort of said, well, we have a few surprises when they came back.
And one of the labels said covert ops. What in the heck are these guys doing? Covert ops, you know? We can't show this.
Yuri and Jim and I need to get into the Soyuz spacecraft. And what we need to do is we basically need to take that spacecraft and move it from one docking port to another.
So they just loaded the camera and everybody else in the Soyuz and flew out away from the space station and shot all these really cool pictures of space stations from Soyuz. But they didn't have a port big enough to look out, so you're looking through a little tiny hole, but it makes you feel like you're sitting here in the Soyuz looking through a porthole out at the space station.
We're in this little bitty lifeboat, and we're flying around this major technological achievement that involved many countries around the world all pulling this together, and we actually have a moment in the IMAX movie where that's documented.
On the day that they did this, they discovered that they hadn't taken into account the little lens box that goes on the front, and they got everything in there, and they couldn't get the camera facing out the window with the lens box on. It was just wouldn't fit. Not to be deterred, Sergei went back into the station and got the shaving mirror.
So they went and stole the mirror out of space station and put a mirror in there and then shot into the mirror and then shot back out the portal. They're problem solvers, all right?
Which is why they are cosmonauts and astronauts.
The most fun is just getting to work with these guys, the astronauts, and to be involved with the space program and seeing them be so proud of what they've done on orbit with the film. You guys did a great job, and they did. It's their film. It's the astronauts' film. We were just the facilitators.
The voices there of Tony Myers, who's the director and producer of both IMAX Space Station 3D and the new movie, Hubble 3D, and James Niehaus, the director of photography on both those films, and we're going to speak to him shortly, and also astronauts Marsha Evans and Susan Helms, and I think a few other astronauts sneaked in on that as well. We have more coming up, as you said, an interview of James Niehaus in a few moments, but first this message about a program that comes on air, I think it's tomorrow night.
Did you love the 90s? Remember when we learned how to plug in and unplug at the same time? It was the decade of grunge, alternative rock, Britpop, old country, hip-hop, raves, chill-outs and the internet. If you want to hear some great obscure album tracks along with the great hits of the decade, then tune into Choice Cuts, the history of rock with Greg, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. You'll hear 4 hours of the best music and some mind-blowing trivia and information about all your favourite artists of the decade. Tune into 88.3 Southern FM and check out all those memories from the closing years of the 20th century. You can even stream straight off the web on www.southernfm.com.au from anywhere in the world.
And Greg's coming up in a few minutes, actually, with a purple haze. But he just told me that tomorrow's show will be a real corker with some music from, he told me the year, I think it was 1977 or 1997, one of the two. Anyway, excellent show assured. Now, we are going to meet James Niehaus. He's the director of photography on both Hubble 3D and Mission to Mir and Space Station 3D. And I met him in Florida at the Cocoa Expo, and that's just near the Cape Canaveral area, and we, you know, a bit of a surprise meeting him, so here's how our conversation went. Right, would you like to identify yourself, please?
Hi, I'm James Niehaus, and I am the director of photography for the Hubble 3D film and Mission to Mir.
Thanks for joining us on the space shuttle.
Shooting film on the space shuttle. It's a lot of fun. I trained the astronauts, actually, to do the filming in space. And They have a lot of fun with an IMAX camera up there that weighs about 90 pounds. And when they start it up, it makes a lot of noise and gets everybody's attention, even on the ground. But they have a good time shooting it. They pick up how to shoot IMAX in space really quick. They're astronauts. They learn how to do things real good and real fast. So it's fun working with them.
Now, you worked on the Shuttle Mir IMAX film.
Yes.
NASA is being very cooperative to IMAX. What about the Russians?
The Russians were very cooperative, as long as we had some money. but it wasn't a lot of money. They, you know, you got to pay for what you do with the film crew. So the Russians were very cooperative. I got to fly in their zero-G airplane and got to do some of the simulations and got to go in mission control, got to go to Baikonur, shoot some launches. So it was, all in all, I mean, shooting their launches is amazing because they let you get right up next to the rocket if you want to be there, unlike here at Kennedy where you can't get within 3 miles of it. And then in Baikonur, you have to be careful you don't get hit by the flying debris.
Yes, there's that wonderful shot in the Space Station 3D in which a piece of debris hits the camera.
Well, I tell you, when I got back out to the launch pad after that was the first piece of the International Space Station that was launched on a Proton. I got back out to that launch pad that afternoon, and all I could see was this glass in front of my camera. And I had no idea when it broke, how it broke, if the camera was still running when it broke. So we had traveled, you know, halfway around the world to film this launch, and here's pieces of my lens laying in front of the camera. So my career flashed in front of my eyes, but... Fortunately, it turned out well because the rock that hit the camera hit after the Proton had cleared the frame. We actually used the entire clip in the film. I've seen people take off their glasses and look at them to see if they're broken, put them back on, you know, so it worked out well.
And what can people expect in Melbourne, Australia, when the new IMAX film you've worked on, the Hubble 3D?
Well, Hubble 3D is going to take the audience to... really the end of the universe, nearly. I mean, we're looking at galaxies back 10 billion light years away. So that light's been traveling to us for 10 billion years. So we're looking back close to the Big Bang. We're going to travel through the Orion Nebula in three-dimensional. This is real space travel. This isn't anything that's made up. This is all real data in three-dimensional space. The only thing that's made up is the speed we're traveling. We'll be traveling at trillions of miles per second.
Many, many times the speed of light.
Many, 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 many times warp 10. it's a beautiful journey. It's amazing what the Hubble has done, what it sees. We also have some very, very nice launch sequences of the STS-125 launch last May from positions that we've not seen before. The astronauts love the launch sequence. They say it's the next best thing to being there, and sometimes I like it better because it's got better music. But, you know.
When let's talk about that Orion sequence. The pictures are real, but you have added the three-dimensional element to it. How did you do that?
Okay, the astronomers, Frank Summers and his group at the Hubble Space Telescope Institute in Baltimore, they have all the three-dimensional data for that. They know how many light years away all these bits and pieces are within the shot. Plus, we know what it looks like from the photos that Hubble has brought back. So we were able to take all that and convert it into XYZ coordinates and actually create 3D space within the computer and then animate our flight through it using the National Supercomputer Center in Urbana, Illinois. Donna Cox and her team did just an incredible fly-through using a system they call Verter, Virtual Director, where you can fly right through all this animation in near real time and adjusted our flight paths. So it's, you know, it's real space.
It must take an enormous amount of computer rendering on this huge IMAX screen to cope with that.
Well, I haven't heard the exact time. I know that that the Orion sequence rendered during the entire time they were off for Christmas vacation this year, and this is on a supercomputer. So yeah, it takes. There's a few bits going through there.
The film covers at least three missions. You've obviously been working on this for quite a while. Did you have an overall objective when you started, or did you sort of look back and say, well, we've already got these shots, we can put them in the film?
Well, the driver for this film was the data that Hubble has been sending back. There's just tons and tons of data of galaxies and nebula and stars and globular clusters and just really interesting things out there that we knew we could animate into 3D. We also knew that we had IMAX film from STS-31, which was the initial launch of the telescope. We had film from STS-61, which was the first Hubble, first repair mission to Hubble. So we knew if we could fly on this final mission, get some 3D of the repair, we could bring the whole story together and have a vehicle for showing all this incredible data that Hubble has been bringing back.
You had some shots during the launch inside the cockpit. Now, obviously you didn't have an IMAX camera running then. How did you do those shots?
We have, on this flight, we've used a lot of media on this one. We've used small cameras that were on the external tank, looking at the external tank during launch. We had one that was in the cockpit looking back at the astronauts prepping for launch. We also used HD video, a Canon XHG1, to shoot inside the cockpit to get interviews, which is something we've never had with IMAX before. If you turn an IMAX camera on in space, it sounds like a sewing machine on steroids. You can't shoot sound with that. So now with this smaller format, even though we'd like to have had the more high-quality images, we got the high-quality content with the interviews, gotten to know the personalities of the astronauts. So we used as many sources as we could. We used the video from the helmet cams that were on the spacewalker's helmet, so we could see when they were inside changing out the rate sensor units on the telescope, when they were out pulling all the little bits and bolts out, and something that, you know, brought the audience right there with what the astronauts were doing.
Now, on previous IMAX movies, we've seen a number of them over the years, the sound of the astronauts in space, the sounds of the shuttle and so on, and the conversations have to be dubbed in. The Hubble film was different. Why was that?
Well, we had this Canon HD video, the G1, and we were able to shoot video and audio at the same time, which is something we couldn't do with IMAX, because IMAX, it sounds like a bloody steering sewing machine that's grown wild. I mean, it's just crazy loud. So you can't really record sound while you're running an IMAX camera, especially not inside a space shuttle. So in the past, we'd have to pick up the lines, we'd record wild track, wild audio here and there, we'd run the tape recorder while we were filming just to know what they were saying, but then we'd have to recreate it later. With this, I mean, Mike Massimino took this thing and turned it into the Mike Show live from space, and it was just incredible what we were able to get from that, from, you know, Drew making his taco to Ray J telling us how you go to the bathroom in space. So there's things we never would have gotten with IMAX, because one, we wouldn't have had the film, and two, the camera was just too loud to shoot that kind of audio.
When I was talking to Tony Myers about Space Station 3D, she had a lot of funny stories to tell about the making of it. I guess you must have a store of those as well.
Most of my funny stories you really can't, aren't for broadcast. you know, it's always interesting with the astronauts, because you know, when they come back, they loosen up, they tell you things they wouldn't tell you before. Apparently, what happened on this flight, there was an engine sensor that went off a half a second after SRB ignition, after the solid rockets launched or ignited. The sensor went off, and it said, basically, you're going to lose the main engine. And so they knew it was a transducer, so they pushed the reset. Now it goes off again a few seconds later, pushed the reset. You know, Houston's got it under control. Everybody's got it under control except for the guys down on the mid-deck. All they're hearing is master alarms going off, things going like this. And one of the veteran astronauts points to the return to launch site abort card. And, you know, and the two rookies are both looking at it, one of which told me, I won't say his name, said, at that point, I started screaming like a little girl. So I hope he forgives me if he ever hears this. That's why I'm not mentioning any names.
Well, thank you for joining us on the space show.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And I was talking there to James Nyhaus, the director of photography for a number of IMAX movies, including Hubble 3D, the new one that starts tomorrow at IMAX Melbourne. And also, he's filmed Mission to Mir. Well, last Wednesday, I was a guest of IMAX and went to the see the film again, and it does look much, much better here in Melbourne than it did at the Kennedy Space Centre, because the Kennedy Space Centre is an old theatre and is much, much smaller, as the IMAX movie advertisements say. Size does matter. We are just queuing up now a little tour I went on of the IMAX projection room, and that was with David Booty. And he's the Senior Technical Advisor at IMAX Melbourne.
Okay, welcome to the IMAX projection room. I'll go through, a few quick facts. Who's been into a regular projection room before? Anyone? No? You have? Okay. So the equipment obviously looks a lot different to what you'd see in a regular cinema. A regular cinema uses 35mm... film, where we use IMAX film. Film runs horizontally through the projector as opposed to vertically, as it does with a regular cinema projector. The frame rate, which is how many images or how many frames per second, is the same, so 24 images are actually on screen every second, except our frames are bigger. So a regular cinema projector will sort of pump through probably somewhere in the area of about 40 centimetres or something a second, and we pump through 1.7 metres of film per second. If it's 3D, there's two of those films racing through the projector every second. We've got a few differences with our sound system. We use a specialised proprietary sound system which IMAX Corporation have developed. It's uncompressed digital audio, and you hear all the hype about Dolby Digital, DTS surround sound, and various other digital formats. Well, those formats are just various film compressions, if you are sorry, audio compressions. IMAX audio is uncompressed digital audio, so there's nothing being compressed, so nothing is being, I suppose, discarded, and it's pure digital audio, 15,000 watts of digital audio. The lamps in the projector are 15,000 watt water-cooled lamps, they're xenon lamps. Again, regular cinema uses xenon lamps, but the max size they would go up to is about 7 kilowatts. We use 15 kilowatts or 15,000 watts. Here's a lamp right here. Here's one I prepared earlier. So that is a 15,000 watt water-cooled lamp. So the water goes in each end down to the anode and the cathode, keeps that cool, just so it doesn't explode. It generates a lot of heat. Now, the light output this would generate, if there was somebody sitting on the moon, they'd actually see the light output from this one lamp on the moon. In our projector, we have two of those running in simultaneously in 3D mode. For a 2D film, there's only one of these burning. So, obviously, only one film running through the projector. So, yes, that's a xenon lamp. Now, we also use, as I touched on before, a...
How much does something like that cost?
That's $5,500 US. And we go through that every 1,200 hours, and that is 3 months, thereabouts. And that's two of those we go through every 3 months, so $11,000 US every 3 months. We change them always before 1,200 hours because we're covered fully by warranty up to 1,200 hours. So if the lamp explodes at 1,199 hours and takes out all the mirrors in the projector, we don't pay a cent. If it blows up at 1,201 hours, we've got to then pay for all the spare parts and the lamps and, you know, we've got to pay for everything. So it's quite a costly exercise. So it's in our best interest to obviously do the right thing. And, you know, lamps, as they're getting old, they tend to get a lot of flicker and the presentation drops away. You know, it just doesn't look as good on screen. And we're all about, you know, big images, big sound, big experience, you know, you can't do that with a dying lamp. So 1,200 hours, it gets booted out the door and get another couple. So what I touched on before was our sound system. It's a little bit different, uncompressed digital audio. We have a similar idea, but not the same, to regular cinemas. So we do have a surround sound. We have speakers on the left, centre and right of screen. What regular cinemas don't have is a top screen, because regular cinema screens are so small. Okay, so we have a top screen, which gives you, I suppose, special effects. Say a fighter jet might be flying over, a helicopter might be flying over. The sound will actually transition up that centre screen speaker. Up the top centre screen speaker. Or, you know, if it's coming from the rear to the front, it will obviously transition from the rear speakers to the top screen, then down to the centre and through the left and right screen channels. As I said, we do have surround, so we do have a left and right surround sound speaker as well. Most cinemas which are running the 5.1 audio still have effectively five channels. We actually have six channels, okay? The point one, if you want, is your low frequency effects, so the sub bass, the rumbling you feel when a space shuttle takes off in Hubble 3D, that sort of thing. Our sub is basically a separate channel yet again, and we've got eight sub bass bins tall enough that you can actually stand in. They're behind the screen, about 8 meters off the floor, on a concrete or steel and concrete framework. And as I said, they're big enough that you can actually stand in. Now, with all the speakers behind the screen, you need a screen that's transparent for sound. Here's one I prepared earlier. This is a bit of IMAX screen. Now, our screen is painted silver. This is how it looks before it gets painted. So it starts off just as a flat white. It gets painted silver. It's full of holes for sound transparency. So looking at it, you know, 15 metres away, it looks like a solid screen, but it's not. It's actually full of holes to make it sound transparent. Now,
and all cinema screens are like that.
All cinema screens are like that, yeah. If you have speakers behind it, it needs to be sound transparent. Most cinema screens are white. Ours is, you know, being a big 3D system, is a silver screen. Frame sizes. Here's also one I prepared earlier. IMAX frames. So this is a complete one frame of IMAX film. This is just the image area of an IMAX film. That's a complete regular cinema, so 35mm frame. And that is the maximum, which is never used, the maximum image area of a 35mm frame. Now that will actually fit inside our image area 10 times, which is why we can offer such big, bright, fantastic images on screen. Now I was talking about frame rates. There you go. What's that? About 40 centimetres? I've never actually measured it, but it's around 30-something, 40 centimetres. That's 1 second of regular cinema film. And 1.7 metres, 24 frames of IMAX film. So this goes through our machine every second. That goes through a regular cinema projector every second. So massive difference, as you can see.
How many frames?
24. 24. Yep, that's 20. Yeah, our frames are bigger, obviously.
Also 24 but bigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, with we're running out of it.
When you do 3D,
yep.
What's the frame rate then?
Still the same. Yep, 24 frames, but there's two films running through. If you have a look at our projector here, we have two films set up in the projector. We have two reel units: one left reel unit, one right reel unit, and the left film will only ever be seen by the left eye, the right film will only ever be seen by the right eye, and that's due to the polarisation in your 3D glasses matching up with a set of polarisers in front of the projector. Now, if you ever wear a pair of, say, Polaroid or polarised sunglasses down the beach and you'll see the reflection off the water and you tilt your head, the reflection goes away or it minimises. So that's cutting out light from certain angles. That's exactly what's happening with polarisers on the projector. The two polarisers, so the left eye and the right eye polariser, are polarising 90 degrees offset from each other. So that's how you separate your left eye and your right eye. Also, only one film is ever on screen at a time. So it projects the left eye film, then the right eye film, then the left eye film, the right eye film.
And that was David Booty taking us on a tour of the IMAX Theatre in Melbourne. He's the senior technical advisor there. And you can see why the tickets are so expensive, but boy, are they worthwhile. That film, Hubble 3D, is absolutely special. As I said, I was a guest there of IMAX last Wednesday, and I did see it actually three times when I was in the United States in April.